Mad Radio on this Tuesday morning at the top of the hour. One of the things that we're going to examine, again, the latest on Deshaun Watson is from Aaron Wilson, from Ian Rapoport, all those guys, is that as long as his ankle looks good today, then he will be the starter Thursday against Cincinnati. We'll have the pregame show starting at 4:30 on Thursday afternoon for that game. I didn't watch much of this game, just the highlights, because of obvious reasons, Texans-Jags. But it sounded like Tony Romo had a pretty nice debut for the Raiders-Titans game on Sunday.
I don't doubt that he did. I just do question. I think a lot of people act like him being able to call out plays beforehand was some stroke of brilliance that nobody else is capable of. I think a lot of color commentators, if they do their appropriate homework, would be able to do that pretty easily. And it's just, I don't look at that. Like, I want to hear more of the highlights of like him telling stories and pointing things out after the fact more than like calling out a play beforehand.
It's not I try to watch as much football as possible on the weekends, like a lot of college, obviously, like the NFL games that we need to watch here. And you don't normally see commentators, except for specific situations, calling out guessing plays as often as he seemed to in the highlight reel they're showing on social media the last day or so.
Yeah, and which is because I think it disrupts the flow.
It can be tricky.
The thing that's annoying about that reel is that he's wrong in at least one instance, because he says there's going to be a crossbuck blitz by the linebackers, and it wasn't. Crossbuck is where the linebackers actually crisscross, like, and they're going opposite A gaps. Those guys just
rushed.
One from the edge, one from the center. Yeah. So like, he was wrong there, and then another one is he pointed out a corner blitz before the fact. I'm like, all right, that's just let Nance do his thing. Like, let Nance do the play-by-play. Now, other than that, it sounded like, just from the other little snippets I heard, that he does have more personality than you necessarily get from his interviews as a player and everything. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here saying like I would be able to call out plays the same way he does. I just think that most quarterbacks, especially, or defensive backs, are really good at that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Because one thing that happens too is, there's stuff that you can see from sky level that you can't quite pick up on the field. Like, most quarterbacks, if they had enough time, if there was no play clock and they didn't have to actually run their own play, would be able to tell you just pretty much everything you need to know about a defense. It's just on field level, you've got to get the playoff, you've got to make your adjustments, and you don't get to see everything. So he's just doing what most good quarterbacks can do when they're color commentators.
Landry, you know Tony Romo decently, and you have been, and I totally understand this, you have been down on Romo and the idea that he's going to come into broadcasting and be really good. Were you surprised by the reviews of Romo?
Not from what he was doing. I think as far as just talking X's and O's, he's going to be pretty good at it now. But yeah, I thought he was going to suck at telling stories, like Seth said. So I didn't see any of that. I just saw him calling plays, and Seth kind of talked me out of that.
Now I feel like a jerk.
No,
I just don't think.
Okay.
Like, think about it. Like, do you really want? It's like sitting next to the person that has to call out the play before you play. You're like, all right, fine, buddy. All right, it's very self-serving. It's like, all right,
run.
Yeah, you're a genius. It's like watching. You know what it is? It's like watching Jeopardy with somebody who's already seen that episode before.
Ah.
Where they're like, oh, look at me, I'm Jeopardy guy.
Jeopardy guy.
I was in the gym the other day, and a guy was doing that. He was calling out the Jeopardy answers.
At the gym?
At the gym, yeah.
Yeah. What a horrible job.
He was pretty good at it, though, too. He was pretty good at it, but I was kind of annoyed just by the concept of him doing it.
Good. Like,
I
feel like you're annoyed by that.
You're showing off. Like, why don't you? It's too bad you couldn't drive your sports car right into the gym, too.
Now,
show us that, too.
We have a little of Phil Simms audio here. Some of the back and forth they had on Sunday. Phil Simms, who was deposed as the number one analyst on CBS for Tony Romo.
Hey, Tony, how you doing? How's that seat feel?
Oh, hey, Phil.
All right, Tony.
Good to hear your voice there.
So that obviously sounds like probably a lot more awkward than it probably was on TV, although, again, I wasn't watching. We were doing the pregame. I have to say this. One of the ways that you learn about people is how they react when they get demoted or fired, but, like, especially demoted at the same company. And maybe I shouldn't be this surprised, but I'm really intrigued by how well Phil Simms has taken to all of this.
Yeah.
I mean, they put him in the studio.
He's still getting paid, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what the financials are for him. Like, I don't know if he takes a pay cut or he just goes with the same, like, deal. But he's, like, been very welcoming.
I think he's probably got the same deal, right? Because it wasn't like he was fired for cause or anything.
Maybe.
He just got demoted, and it was because a younger, hotter chick came along.
Yeah.
And that was where he got dumped for the younger, prettier girl.
But that would bother a lot of people, and he was basically like, hey, listen, I played quarterback in the NFL for 15 years, and I was going to go and ask for a pay raise, and they cut me. And he was like, I did this for 15 years, yeah. And they went with somebody else.
I did it for 15 years. Like, frankly, a lot of people couldn't understand how I got the loftiest position at the network as a color commentator, and I often described things that didn't actually happen and then would double down on them during the replay. He was bad at what he did.
I'll also say this, though. I think Phil, like, I've interviewed Phil on the radio a few times, and I heard him last week when Craig Carton, because of the whole money, like, the money deal.
Yeah.
He's actually pretty good in those spots, which makes it intriguing that he had become so stale as an
it's
analyst.
It's hard. It's really hard to color commentate. That's what nobody like. It's hard to do, man. I don't take many opportunities to do it because I know how hard it is. And like you, I know it's a job where, aside from it being really hard to be good at it, even when you are good at it, you're wrong a lot of the time because you're trying to, in football especially, it's impossible to see everything that's going on at once. And that's why, like, as a quarterback even, like Tony Romo, as smart as he is, to really know what goes on in a play, sometimes you have to watch it 10 or 15 times. And even then, you don't know what's going on unless a defensive coach tells you exactly what coverage was supposed to do in that. So it's just a really hard job to do right. And Sims had kind of let the game pass him by where people want more detailed explanations of things. And I think people want a little bit more technical analysis. And also, people want you to actually watch the replay when you're talking about what happened. The problem is, you know what it is? It's not the technical analysis. It's that the high definition and the replayability on these broadcasts has gotten to the point where you can't just say something and have the viewer accept it. They can see with their own eyes that the guy's foot was out of bounds.
Yep.
So don't sit there and tell me that his foot's not out of bounds when his foot is clearly out of bounds. But Sims would routinely do that. He would do it quite eloquently, but he would just...
That's what he would do.
He would eloquently describe things that never actually happened, and that's not a way to retain your job as the number one color commentator in a network.
We'll hit on the Deshaun Watson trade top of the hour real quick here. So Verlander starts tonight for the Astros against the Angels. It's Verlander and McCullers going tomorrow, and I believe it's Peacock on Thursday. I believe that's the way that it's shaking out with the series.
Because McHugh, we still don't know when he's going to come back from his fingernail avulsion. Which sounds disgusting. The last time he had a fingernail avulsion, which is when your fingernail just comes off the bed of your finger. The last time he didn't miss a start, but we don't know exactly the difference between this time and that time.
Yeah, so we'll see when he's back. Mike, two quick observations from the weekend. I mean, Giles really got it rolling, although, in fairness, they did blow a 7-3 lead on Friday night, allowing a grand slam on Friday. So that got the ball rolling for the weekend. The bullpen was just incredibly horrific this weekend. And Keuchel wasn't very good in the sixth inning, I think it was, on Sunday, when he pitched, like, I think it was like 40 pitches, walking, hitting a guy, walking two different guys with the bases loaded. Just a horrific display from the bullpen. I mean, it's almost like they were so bad out of the bullpen, and it's almost like, well, if you get nobody out, then I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad it was. Yeah. It was everybody. Giles, like, literally everybody.
There's a little pet theory I'm working on, but I don't want to offer this up as an excuse or to trivialize Harvey at all or anything. But with what happened with the Texans and the Astros this last weekend, it almost feels like there's just cumulative Harvey fatigue, because everybody, we're all going through it to some extent. First responders obviously have it way worse than anybody else, and people that have been displaced from their homes obviously are just physically tired, emotionally tired, all of that. But like, everybody to some degree's routine and process has been messed up, and everybody's dealing with, a lot of people are dealing with some kind of stress, either because you or your family members or whoever else. And I feel like it's taken a cumulative toll on the sports teams too. Like, however, like every... however much it multiplies over the course of a 53-man roster, just how out of sorts were those guys and how tired are they after 2 weeks compared to the other team? The Jaguars were dealing with their own thing, but they were at the very beginning of it. They were distracted because they had evacuation orders back in Jacksonville, but they hadn't necessarily been fatigued by 2 weeks of it already.
I will take your opinion into consideration.
There's no way to ever actually verify that that's what happened or anything, but man... swept by the A's, where your pitching staff has an 11.25 ERA over the course of four games, there's got to be something above and beyond just, this is a bad stretch.
I will take your theory under advisement and see what happens over the next few weeks. Hopefully things change rapidly.
Give it to your little scientist or whatever and then get back to me.
Top of the hour. If Deshaun Watson is good, then does not having a first-round pick even matter coming up in the spring? And what Landry is going to do if we see Tom Savage again as the Texans quarterback?